Okay, I will call this property tax division meeting to order. We do have quorum, so we can conduct lawful business. First, we have to approve the minutes from March 13th. Do I have a motion? And it looks like Chair Gomez makes that motion.
So moved.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries. Okay, we have four bills up today. And first up is House File 4990. Representative Davis, I will move that House File 4990 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report and to the bill, my dear friend.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. And this bill has to do with resorts. And we generally think of the resorts being up north. Of course, for me, Rochester, Minnesota is up north. But I've had the privilege to be at many of the resorts across the state, the northern part of the state, and they are beautiful, and they are something that I certainly cherish myself. But it's a little known fact that Southeast Minnesota also has some resorts. In fact, we have the resort of the year, the Johnson's, Larry Johnson's wife started, and they sold to their daughter now, so it's still in the family, and I invite anyone to come down visit us down in Delmarva County. So what this bill does, I would maybe if staff could kind of give a clarification, exactly the bill doesn't have one witness that I know of, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 4990 would increase the valuation tiers for the 1C Homestead Resorts property tax classification. Historically, this classification has been referred to as the Mon-Pa Resort classification. Members should have a House Research Bill summary in their packets that show the increases in each of the three tiers. So under current law, the thresholds are in the middle column of that table. The amount of value that is allowed in each of the first two tiers increases under the bill to the amount shown in the third column of the table.
Go to our witness here.
Mr. Carlson, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I represent the community of Minnesota Resorts, a group that I've been affiliated with since 1997. And the members of our association are directly impacted by this bill, and as you read the bill, you'll know this. These are homestead resorts. They live at the resort, what we used to call Mom and Pop resorts. It abuts Lakeshore. Unlike other resorts that maybe aren't on Lakeshore, the resorts in this bill, they live at their resort. They abut Lakeshore. They're only open 250 days a year for recreational use. And in the year 2000, the legislature recognized the issue of property taxes for resorts and their ability to stay in business. We used to have about 3,500 resorts in Minnesota. We're down to just over 600. And when the resort is worth more than the value of the business, they're sold for private development and they never come back. And these are community assets that all of your constituents go to. And once they're gone, they never come back. And so instead of having a family come to the resort for their week in the summer, you have one private home. And we really appreciate the work the legislature has done to help resorts remain economically viable. This bill adjusts the two property tax tiers that that have not been adjusted since 2008. As you know, we had a rampant increase in property values during the pandemic, particularly of Lakeshore property. All of that gets built into the value of these resorts, and their property taxes are their single largest operating expense. We'd appreciate your consideration of this bill, and we're happy to answer questions. And I would note, as Chair Davids mentioned, Cedar Valley Resort, which is one of our members in Fillmore County, was the resort of the year from our association just a couple years ago, and it is a beautiful facility. They were here for our day on the Hill to lobby all of you on this bill, and so we think of it being all of Highway 10 and above, but it really isn't. We have resorts in southwestern Minnesota. We have them in Spicer, and they're dotted around the state, so they're an important asset. We appreciate your support.
Thank you. Anyone in the audience want to testify for or against? Seeing none, member discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I fully support the bill. It's difficult with these increasing valuations for resorts to make it, and again, fully support it. But just wondering if the bill author has treats for the committee. I don't know if this is his first bill or not.
Representative Davis, that is a valid question.
Chair, and it certainly is, and Representative Anderson. After 32 years, it's not my first
bill. Anyone else? Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. No question per se, just sort of a comment. I noticed, so according to nonpartisan staff, under current law, approximately 47% of this taxable market value on this particular class is in the first tier, 44% is in the second tier, and 9% in the third tier. And this would change that such that 67% would be in the first tier, 28% in the second tier, and 6% in the third tier. And I don't know if those are the right numbers or not, just sort of raising that as a policy question and something I think we'll want to consider moving forward as we think about how this shifts values and so on. Just kind of wanted to raise that as an issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Mr. Carlson.
I know we're trying to be extremely brief. That's an excellent question, Representative. I just want you to know when we had the grand bargain in 2000, we were asking for a different valuation, and the whole point was to try and keep two-thirds of the value in the first tier. So this gets us to where we were. So I appreciate the question very much, and I don't want to lose my lobbying card from my fellow lobbyists. I want to make sure that I note that Hospitality Minnesota and their Resort and Campground Association also is very supportive of this bill.
Any other member? Seeing none, closing comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't know you had a lobbying card. I've got marijuana stamps. Just bought them today. They're not very big. They're very small. So with that, I'd really appreciate your. I appreciate the hearing. I appreciate the consideration. I put this in the property tax division reports.
Thank you so much. Chair renews his motion that House File 4990 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The bill is laid over.
Thank you, Chair members.
Okay. Next, we have House File 4942. Chair Yu Akeem. Chair moves that House File 4942 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Tax Division report. So, welcome to the committee. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing House File 4942 today. Thank you to the members on this early morning. This is a request for 5-year extension on two different parcels certified as tax increment financing districts in the city of Edina. As you know, and I don't have to explain this to you guys on this committee, that TIF is an important tool in the toolbox for cities that are either fully or predominantly developed to attract upgraded redevelopment and expand the tax base. To certify a TIF district, there is a process in which a municipality must show that property fits the but-for test. The development would not happen but for the aid of TIF. I know members, like I said, are very familiar with this and with also very familiar with extensions that are asked for over time to react to market pressures that are frequently out of the developer or city's control. One of the parcels that the city of Edina is seeking an extension on is for at 72nd and France. I think you have the one pager in your handout. This is a 5.2 acres that was certified in early 23 as a redevelopment district. It removed an old commercial building with the intention of splitting up the area into three blocks and utilizing TIF increments to build new roads, sidewalks, storm facilities, and a public plaza. The two largest blocks will be redeveloped to include an office building and a new hotel or multifamily housing development, depending on what the market's needed. The land was purchased and cleared by the developer, but the rapid rise in interest rates and the tightening of the capital investment markets in 23 and beginning of 24 has stalled the project. The other parcel is at 70th and France, is a 5.8 acre parcel that is also seeking a 5-year extension to a renewal district that was certified in early 22. Here, an outdated commercial building was bought with the intention of splitting up the area into four blocks and utilizing the TIF increment to build new roads, sidewalks, bicycle facilities, Hubba Plaza. The anticipated project will be redeveloped to include a bank, new office or retail building, and a new apartment building and new shared parking. The developer expected to break ground in the summer of 23, but has faced similar barriers as the other parcel. Members, there has been some community concern over the creation of the TIF district, but there are a few things that you should know. Edina currently has only 1.2% of their tax base in TIF districts. Just over 70% of Edina residents own their homes, and the city has worked hard to invest in affordable housing over the last few years. I'm proud of their work with Beacon Urban Faith Outreach and development for a homeless youth project that was built in 2015, very near the TIF parcels we're discussing here today. Finally, residents in Edina have been strong supporters of their public education system, which I am also very proud of as the Education Finance Chair. Edina schools have not been immune to the budget cuts many of our public schools are facing across the state. And while we made historic investments in the K-12 education system last session, you cannot turn around 20 years of underfunding overnight. Our schools are still struggling. There has been some concern that the TIF district will divert funds from our public schools. I want to assure you that our schools still get their share of the property taxes on this on these parcels. With that, members, I'd like to turn the testimony over to Bill Neundorf, Economic Director of City of Edina, to briefly tell you a bit more about the redevelopment in these areas and answer any technical questions you may have.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, good morning. My name is Bill Neundorf. I'm the City of Edina's Economic Development Manager. Happy to be here this morning, and thanks for your consideration. Of course, I'm here to testify in support of this House file and this request because it would enable two transformational commercial redevelopment projects to occur in Edina. The problem that the developers ran into last year has stymied and put the brakes on hard on both of those projects. That was a surprise. The developers have been running hard on both of these projects since about 2021. They've secured their private equity investors. They've acquired the land, bought the corporation that owned the properties. They've invested millions into their design, worked through the city's review process with community groups and the city council to get all their zoning. Unfortunately, the condition of the capital markets, as we all know, last year was unable to provide the private financing to actually break ground on the project. So what's happened so far is the developers have removed all the blighted buildings, which is a good first step. They've allowed one of the tenants in the building to relocate into a brand new building, which is the first step to get everything else moving. And it's exciting to see that first step, even though we want to see the last step, not just the first. But if you look at the achievements of the first step, they've transformed and created modern business operations. For this one small parcel, this one small chunk of the TIF district, the property tax base has tripled from 1.3 million to over 4 million. The taxes paid to the schools have increased from $8,000 to $24,000 so far. The increase paid to the city and county has tripled from $11,000 each year to over $35,000. And the increases in property taxes paid to the state and fiscal disparity pools has tripled from $21,000 to $60,000. Now that's just for the first step to start this whole process. So we're excited to have this continue. But in order to deal with this pause in a project, we're requesting that the TIF district be, that the start of it be delayed and the five-year extension be pushed back. We're also asking that the TIF districts be extended to account for inflationary increases that we know are coming, but we don't know exactly where they're going to be when the projects are delivered. With that, I'm happy to answer any other questions you might have.
Thank you. We do have one other testifier, Jim Groats. I said the name, right? Please come, welcome. State your name for the record and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Groats and I'm from Edina. And I'm here testifying against this bill. My opening remark basically is coming off the last half of the last sentence from the House research file for this, which says compliance with filing requirements for special laws. As we all know, TIF districts and real estate transactions have special laws that must be followed. And the problem here began when I became suspicious in looking at the county website And it said the last time the one of the buildings in this TIF had sold was 2007, another one 2018. So I made a trip down to the county registrar and inquired as to where was the missing data, because as we just heard from Mr. Neuendorf, these properties sold in 2021. Where's the sales data for this? And the registrar was surprised when I said, when I said, oh, by the way, the buildings have been torn down and it's in a TIF. And he went and checked and said, we have no sales data. He then went and checked and said, there's no ECRV for this transaction. And ECRV. I've got a piece here from the Minnesota Department of Revenue website. An electronic certificate of real estate value, which states an electronic certificate of real estate value documents a property sale in Minnesota. Department of Revenue and the County of Sale review ECRV information to verify sale terms and ensure property tax, fair property tax assessments in bold letters. An ECRV must be filed when Minnesota real property is sold or transferred in consideration of more than $3,000. Well, these transactions were in the millions of dollars. And the issue here is that, and I'm quoting from a TIF document, that this sale price must be certified by the Commissioner of Revenue as to the date when the certification request was received. Now, what has happened here is there is no ECRV number at the Department of Revenue. County had three different people look at it. They can't find it. Because they don't have anything, they can't file any documents. They don't have documents to file. And until such time as this the proper procedure and compliance has been done with these documents, there is no TIF district. The city may have filed papers, but it looks to me like they're just merely interesting pieces of paper. And I have challenged the legal standing on this because there's no ECRV. And their records still show the property last transaction was 2017-2018. This is a problem. Now, I realize COVID, you know, you heard him say that this was done in 2021, that COVID was in, you know, kind of an issue at that time. So I am hereby requesting that the committee administrator for this committee, I will leave some information here with the bill author, and but I'm requesting that the committee administrator kick this up with legal staff at the Department of Revenue. It could be that somebody did do their job back in 2021. That's a possibility here. But the other possibility is somebody didn't do something here, and we don't know why and what it is that why they would want to try to hide this sale price. And the fact that this is required by the Department of Revenue to be certified by the Commissioner of Revenue as to the date when certification request was received. The problem here is because the buildings have been torn down and the TIF window is closed, they cannot redo this again.
Well, thank you so much. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion, so there will be ample time. Thank you so much for your testimony. You. Anyone else in the audience that would like to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, member discussion. Lead Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, it's interesting that maybe there's some stuff that hasn't been done. I assume that we're going to find out as a committee, probably offline on that. But I was looking at this, you know, both the bill language and the research summary, and the research summary extend the duration of each district by an additional 10 years, 1.9, 1.10, and 2.5, 2.3. After the expiration of the first or of the five-year period is extended to 11 years, but in the testimony, we're hearing about a five-year extension. But in the paperwork we have here,
I'm seeing that it's an additional 10 years. So that gives me a little bit of pause. And that was before the testimony that there isn't the appropriate documentation on the process of this. About 3 years after some of the stuff happened? And also, I'm a little bit concerned. There's three x increase in taxes in a 3 year or a short period of time. It'd be nice to have details so we can actually understand this, because I want to avoid a precedent setting thing. And if we don't have the documentation, there's conflicting information in our sources. I'm a bit at a pause. I know we're laying this over, but I think we need that information. And if this was to be included in something, we need to have a thorough discussion to make sure that, you know, the public realizes we're doing our due diligence. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde, and thank you, Representative Quam. I'm sorry if I misspoke. I was spent an hour and a half with Mr. Gratz on a Zoom call last night, so I could get all the information as well as talk with the city. And so I was up until about 1:30 in the morning. So, no, it is, you're right. Good eye. 5 years on one, 10 on the other. I do have something for the page. There is an ECRV on the property at 70th. I don't know if Mr. Gratz just looked up the wrong number, and the other property has not been sold. It was just changed partners. And could I toss that over to Mr. Neundorfer?
You sure can.
Yes, thank you. So on the 70th and France site, there is a ECRV filed for that. I just passed a copy up. I think the previous testifier had looked up the wrong PID number, which is common. The PID numbers change with big projects like this. And then with the other project at 72nd and France, I spoke with the developer yesterday, and he confirmed that they haven't technically sold the real estate. They've changed ownership of the corporation. So that does not trigger the filing for the ECRV. But he did confirm that their transactional price is accurately recorded on the county website, about $10 million. So I think the numbers are there. But in this case, for the best of our knowledge, it is not required to file the ECRV.
Okay, thank you. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde. And to the testifier, so when a corporation is bought, that because it's owned by the entity, it's not a property sale. It's acquiring all assets, including real property assets. The question I have for you is, how does that affect if there's a 1031 exchange where there's an ownership change, but it's not recognized as a sale by the IRS to trigger certain tax implications on that? I'm assuming that that's just an update of title as well as who's in title, and there's no sale specific because it's an exchange of properties, an exchange of basis on there. I realize that this is the property tax committee, and that may be more of a tax committee related question, but the two are definitely connected here today in our conversation in the committee.
Mr. Neuendorf.
I'm sorry, I don't have a great answer for that. I'm not a real estate attorney. So to the best of my knowledge, this is not a 1031 exchange. So I'm not certain how that would choose even in law.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yeah, again, I recognize that it's a corporate change, which is perfectly fine. It's a change of the organization ownership, which doesn't affect the titling of the assets because the entity still owns the assets. The question that I had is, if in your experience, how would you have dealt with a 1031 exchange? And that's fine if you don't have the experience, because it's not stumped the testifier today. It's just a thought that occurred to me that's similar to an ownership change that is not a true transfer of title as recognized by law.
Thank you. And the document that you just provided to for clarification is being printed out and will be distributed. Anyone else, any other committee members who would like to comment on the bill? Closing comments.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde. Thank you for the questions and comments. I really do miss Property Tax Committee. It is a little more interesting sometimes than taxes, but I'm sorry. I should not have said that with the chair of taxes at the table.
But it made me feel good. Thank you.
And you all know me. I will do my homework. I will make sure that this is where it's what it needs to be before you move forward on it. And I, like I said, I talked to Mr. Groats at length, and we'll continue to try to get the answers he needs to hear from Hennepin County and the Department of Revenue. But having been a former city council member in a town that's 2 by 2 miles big and really is fully developed, you do what you can and use every tool in the toolbox to make sure that you're expanding your tax base for your citizens. So everybody has to pay a little bit less. So TIF is really just that important piece that is in the toolbox. It spurs economic activity and creates a bigger pie. Members, I would ask for your consideration of these two, the 5-year extension and the 10-year extension as you put your bill together. So thank you.
Thank you. Chair renews his motion that House File 4942 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The bill is laid over. Thank you so much. Okay, next up, we have House File 4973. Chair Pinto. So, Chair moves that House File 4973 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members as well. Glad to be with all of you. The bill before you, House File 4973, relates to a unique property in my district, which was the site of the former Ford plant. The bill would extend the TIF 5-year rule by an additional 5 years for that site. And it's bringing crucial housing, both market rate and affordable housing, this area is, and economic development to the region. And we just want to make sure that the development in that site, 120 acres in St. Paul, can proceed. I have with me Nicole Goodman, who's the Director of Planning and Economic Development for the City of St. Paul. Are we having trouble with my microphone? Is everything okay?
Right. No. I'm having trouble with my computer, actually.
Okay. Mr. Chair, okay, good. Well, I will continue to hand things over to Director Goodman, if I can, Mr. Chair, to provide more information on the bill.
Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Nicole Goodman. I'm the Director of the Department of Planning and Economic Development with the City of St. Paul. I'm here this morning to testify in support of this bill. As mentioned, the Ford site TIF district supports a 120-acre redevelopment project in St. Paul, which is transforming a former auto manufacturing assembly plant into a vibrant mixed-use urban community. The current development plan for the site supports 250,000 plus square feet of office space, approximately 150,000 square feet of retail space, and nearly 3,800 housing units. The development of the site is bringing desperately needed housing to the region, including a substantial inventory of affordable housing. The development plans call for 20% of the nearly 3,800 total housing units to be affordable. Half of those will be deeply affordable at 30% of AMI, a fourth will be affordable at 50% of AMI, and the remaining fourth 60% of AMI. A significant portion of the housing and infrastructure has been built. 824 housing units have been built total, 195 income restricted affordable to date, 120 of which are at 30% of AMI. In addition, much of the infrastructure has been built, 3 or 4 parks constructed, much of the open spaces and some of the utilities. That said, the site needs extensive infrastructure on all 120 acres in order to allow for all of the commercial, retail, and residential construction to continue. In December of 2019, the City and HRA approved a development agreement with Ryan Companies to complete the horizontal development of the site. And the expectation was that all of those horizontal improvements would be completed by the end of December of 2025, which would enable all of the blocks to be development ready. This would have coincided with the expiration of the 5-year rule. As mentioned in previous testimony, development environment has changed significantly. Development on this site has stalled due to a multitude of factors, from the impact of COVID-19 to dramatic increases in construction costs, a very difficult lending environment, and other market conditions. This legislation would allow for some of the remaining public infrastructure to be delayed, allowing for either a change in market conditions or adjustments to be made to development plans. Without the extension of the 5-year rule, which will establish our baseline for pooling of tax increment, the future affordable housing projects will be in jeopardy. The legislation being considered would extend the 5-year rule by an additional 5 years for this one TIF district in order to keep this transformative development project going. We appreciate your consideration of this bill, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Anyone in the audience would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, member discussion.
Vice Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lislegarde. Very quickly, thank you for bringing this before us, Chair Pinto, and I appreciate the focus on increasing our stock of housing and affordable housing in St. Paul. So.
Seeing no other discussion, final word.
Thank you so much, Chair, for giving the bill a hearing. And I will say this is a huge opportunity in our community and just needs this tweak. I'm asking this committee to be able to take full advantage of it. It's a pretty amazing site.
Thank you. Chair renews his motion that House File 4973 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The bill is laid over. Thank you. Okay, next we have House File 2436. Chair Hansen's committee. Chair moves that House File 2436 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Welcome to the committee. Please present your bill. I think you do have an A1 amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment, this bill actually has a lower number, this was introduced last year, so we have to update the dates, and from council gave us that suggestion. So if you could move the A1 amendment and get it in the bill up.
I will move the A1 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. It is. To-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2436 as amended relates to redevelopment homestead credit for South St. Paul. And if you've been to South St. Paul, whether it was when the stockyards were there or now, we were a one-horse town. We were stockyards. And if you notice in the bill, it talks about criteria that were established by the USDA Department of Commerce back in the 1960s. That designation as an economically distressed area still exists. We still have not fully recovered from the loss of the stockyards 40 years ago. We have tried to redevelop area. Most of our property tax base is residential. Most of that residential is very old. We have old infrastructure, old schools, old houses. But our community has supported levies for the school. The last 2022, the levy passed with, I think, about 25 votes. So we've supported education. But our capacity, my home values, I just got my property taxes in, and our home values are decreasing. So a suburban community with the home values decrease. And we're the only community, I think, like that in Dakota County. We don't have much area to redevelop. There's not a lot of open land. And so what this bill does is it uses the precedent from the 70% covering some of additional levies and takes that to a homestead redevelopment. I understand it is ongoing, and Mr. Chair, you probably don't have ongoing money, but any little bit would help, and even if it's one time would help. And I have with me Ryan Garcia, who's the city manager, to do a little more explanation.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, commissioners. Ryan Garcia, the city administrator for the city of South St. Paul. Representative Hansen articulated pretty well the city of South St. Paul's challenges as it relates to property tax capacity and our property tax rate. We have obviously witnessed tremendous change in the last couple of generations with the loss of sort of what was the center of our economy and our tax base. Over 55% of the homes in our community were built prior to 1950, 25% of those prior to 1930. So we do, as Representative Hansen mentioned, have a very strong proportion of our residential tax base that is in older, more modest homes. So that's reflective of our total tax capacity in Dakota County being the second lowest among all Dakota County cities. And we do have the lowest or the second highest property tax rate among Dakota County communities. And again, that's weighing heavily on the residential tax base because really, unlike most of our neighbors, we didn't develop with sort of commercial property tax along with our residential. We're mostly a residential property tax-based community. Just a couple of other sort of statistics that hopefully reflect the urgency and the need that's present in South St. Paul. Our median household income, again, those folks that are that own those homesteads, over 5,300 homesteads in South St. Paul. Our median household income in those homes is really, it's only 75% that of our neighboring communities in Dakota County, only 80% of those here within the seven county metro, and really only 90% of those statewide. So we are a lower income community, a lower property tax based community, and we do have, you know, as an older city, we have significant needs to maintain service, to maintain facilities that help us to maintain service to our communities. Our five-year capital improvements program looks at over $109 million worth of need within our community. Now we've been careful to not overextend ourselves in any one year. We've been creative in the way that we finance the meeting of those needs, not only through borrowing, but through partnerships, through saving, through, again, that property tax levy that does impact our homeowners. So we are looking for any modicum of relief that might be available given our unique circumstances here in the metro and here within the state of Minnesota. So we thank Representative Hansen for bringing this forward, and we thank the committee for considering this bill.
Thank you. There's no one else on the agenda, but anyone from the audience want to speak for or against? Okay, open it up for member discussion. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I seem to remember decades ago when the stockyards closed, there was a special, some special programs and funding to try and redevelop that area. And so that failed.
Mr. Garcia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Yes, the city has historically used both urban renewal funds from the federal government, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, but also our tax increment financing authority. There is a redevelopment area that was established in, you're right, decades ago. To say that it's failed, I would say that's inaccurate. If you were to visit South St. Paul, the area that was previously occupied by the Union Stockyards, the Armor Factory, and the Swift Plant, we have only one parcel within the former Armor area, which was over 120 acres of contaminated, blighted land. Only one 3.5-acre parcel that's remaining open for development within the Stockyards area, which was over 200 acres in size. We have only two parcels totaling about 2.5 acres available for redevelopment. So there has been significant redevelopment. The fact of the matter is, in South St. Paul's history, you know, in pre-1960, when those plants were still operating, there was literally 6 million square feet of industrial space that occupied those properties. They were heavily, very densely developed. There were significant structures, at one time the largest industrial building in Minnesota. That hasn't been replaced. That square footage, that value hasn't been replaced. The city has, frankly, by choice, diversified its economy, smaller buildings, small businesses, rather than, again, as Representative Hansen mentioned, sort of hitching our wagon to one large industrial development, because we did see the damage that could do if that development happened to fail. So thank you for the question. It's a great question, but I'll give all the credit to my predecessors who did the hard work of cleaning up those contaminated lands, attracting new businesses, and helping small businesses to grow in those spaces.
Representative Cole.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've got confirmation that the city planned to have this sort of consistency with the city. I know of a lot of locations that don't have much industrial. And in fact, the school district I live in is below the state average for tax capacity per person per pupil. So, you know, it doesn't have the industrial but we aren't looking for setting a new precedent, you know, in the state. And you know, frankly, if we do this, then how many hundreds of other communities would be coming forward for the same thing? And you mentioned that you've got old housing, and so you've got a you're getting additional money and have for decades for you know, pre-1940 housing, and I'm assuming that you're using that extra money for the infrastructure and to revitalize those neighborhoods. So I'm a bit, I guess, surprised. What is the state average property tax capacity, you know, per resident, and how does your city's tax capacity compare to that? Because that will help me understand just how much exposure we may have from multiple communities across the state.
Mr. Garcia.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you for the question. I'm afraid that I am not prepared to answer a question about how our local property tax capacity compares to the state. I do know that within Dakota County, we, as I mentioned, we have the lowest property tax capacity within Dakota County. You know, again, our median home values, as Representative Hansen, are already low and have decreased over the last year. But unfortunately, I don't have the data as it relates to the statewide average.
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When it comes to considering setting a new precedent, we really need to understand the data behind that. I'm surprised that when they came forward asking for this, they didn't have, you know, here's how the state is, we're, you know, here's where we are, and you know, the numbers. I don't think that this is, you know, legally this isn't right for us to make a decision on because we don't have the information, and it's not a trivial thing because I think it opens up an unknown exposure. So that's my caution on this topic. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep, appreciate your feedback. Any other members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It, maybe you can't comment on this, but I understand your situation in South St. Paul. And it would seem like your city or your school district would be tailor-made for the state levy equalization system we have. So talking in terms of your school district, their equalization rates, is it favorable? Do they get a lot of help from the state on the equalization?
I'm going to go to Representative Hansen.
Thank you. And the reason we're here with this bill is we have tried for equalization for as long as I've been in the legislature, and it has not happened. And I think the last time the equalization occurred, it excluded the 7th County metro area. So we are a prime candidate for that. So we are trying with this bill to try to find some way of providing some ability to fund these critical arts. Yes. We do get LGA, and we appreciate, Mr. Chair, the amount of money we received in addition last year. But our expenses are significant, and we have an aging infrastructure, aging buildings, aging businesses, and all of that. I would say also that the precedent has been set already. I mean, we are funding 70% of capital levies in other situations. So I'm trying to find a creative way here of getting some simple thing. And the issue has been the same with equalization. Bringing an equalization bill opens up the whole equalization. And we've tried a one-time, I mean, I've had bills for one-time equalization just for South St. Paul. We've tried to do it as part of the whole package. But it just doesn't happen. And so this was an attempt to try some other way, looking at the precedent that had already been set in another area for capital levies. I'm fully aware that it, you know, I know the concerns about what that may do in the future, but I'm trying to support my district, the community that I live in, and also, you know, I see it. The home values go down.
Representative Anderson?
No,
anyone else? Well, before I go for closing comments, I just want to say that I did look up the tax capacity per person, not for the whole state. Minneapolis is at 1588, Invergrove Heights 1567, Rochester 1567, Newport 1393, all the way down, and then you get to St. Paul, they're at $1,061. So, you know, the story that you're telling is real. There are certain parts of or certain communities that, change is extremely difficult. And when you have that kind of industry and that kind of horsepower that generates so much and then goes away, it is very, very difficult. And then you have the aging housing stock. And then how do you change? How do you transition? It's very, very difficult. So, Representative Hansen, I truly appreciate you're being creative and trying to find a way, even your comment of, one-time money. How do we start this conversation? The equalization conversation is a real one, too. And so I really do appreciate you bringing this forward. It's a true story, and you told it well. So closing comments.
Well, and I invite all of you to come to South St. Paul and spend some money if you would like. There's the Croatian Hall, and we have a coffee shop that I don't have a coffee shop in my entire district. The entire district, not one coffee shop. The last one closed, and we're trying to get it reopened and community support. Mm-hmm. And so it's not open, otherwise I would have brought scones and donuts this morning. but it's not quite open yet. So, but I encourage you to come to South St. Paul, spend some money. Happy to show you around.
Mr. Chair, perhaps we can invite Representative Hansen back before we consider this bill if the opening of that particular establishment occurs prior to the vote in this committee.
We'll take that into consideration. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it forward. The chair renews his motion that House File 2436 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion into the Property Tax Division report. The bill is laid over. Thank you. All right. And I believe that concludes our business for today. So the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.